Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at sickle cell disease, an inherited blood disorder that affects the red blood cells. Sickle cell anemia is characterized by abnormally shaped red blood cells and can cause anemia, severe pain, infections, and organ damage. Global data reveal that people of African, Middle Eastern, and South Asian descent are more at risk. We start in Uganda, where sickle cell disease is a challenge in rural areas where the condition remains poorly understood. In eastern Uganda, a young woman living with the disease is ramping up efforts to educate and counsel communities about the blood disorder.
Barbara Nabulo spends time at Mbale Regional Referral Hospital in eastern Uganda. She talks to caregivers and patients, mostly children, who have been rushed here for medical emergencies after a sickle cell crisis. As a sickle cell sufferer herself, Nabulo knows all too well what these people are going through.
They never thought of me as an important thing, like someone who would grow up or someone who is supposed to get an education, because they used to tell my mother that people like me don't grow, we can't go to school, and we don't produce children. So as a child, my mother looked after me, and when I was 12 years old, she would put me in a taxi from our village, and she would tell me to go to the clinic, and I would get medicine that the doctor would have prescribed.
Her mother, Agata Nambuya, remembers her daughter's head and limbs swelling up just 2 weeks after her birth.
We change bloods. After that, you see the child swelling. And he feel everywhere pain. And he can cry all the time. And that what I saw that time. All the time I have been in the hospital.
Nabulo's mother says she is proud of her daughter's three children and her work as a counselor. Encouraged by hospital authorities, Nabulo joins health workers to raise awareness and advocate for testing children for sickle cell as early as possible. Dr. Julian Abeso is the head of pediatrics at the Mbale Regional Referral Hospital and a researcher on sickle cell disease.
On average, most of these children will start falling sick between the ages of 6 to 8 months. So by the time the child reaches, let's say, 10 years, the child will have been admitted several times if we do not give some of these preventive drugs.
The Mbale Referral Hospital looks after hundreds of patients arriving from nearby villages to pick up medication. Many receive doses of hydroxyurea, a drug that can reduce periods of severe pain and other complications.
I would say a wonder drug. It has changed the course of managing children with sickle cell. We used to be so frustrated, you know. You care for a child, then they reach like 12 years, and they get so many complications, and even you start wishing and saying, this child. So because of that trauma, hydroxyurea has now changed it. Like, it improves on the what? On the quality of life of these patients.
One of Dr. Abeso's patients is John Ilungat, who at 23 looks younger due to stunted growth.
Before he was 2 years back, he was falling sick, but we didn't know which disease that. So when we confirmed when he was 2 years in Atutur, then from there we started struggling up to now.
Sickle cell disease, which can stunt physical growth, is more common in malaria-prone regions, notably Africa and India. The World Health Organization estimates that the prevalence of sickle cell anemia is as high as 45% in some parts of Uganda.
For more insight on the incidence and management of the sickle cell disease in Africa, we spoke with Dr. Hajar Maman Nasir, a public health expert in Abuja, Nigeria.
Sickle cell disease is an inherited blood disorder where there is a defect in the hemoglobin. First of all, oxygen is needed for our body to function properly. And a hemoglobin is the vehicle that carries this oxygen within the body. Sub-Saharan Africa has the highest burden of sickle cell all within Africa, and Nigeria has the highest sickle cell cases in the entire world, where every year babies that are born, 150,000 to 200,000 babies have the sickle cell disease. The blood cells, usually the red blood cells, they are round and they are flexible. So that way blood is able to flow within the body freely and execute its function. But in sickle cell disease, what happens here is this sickle cell, the blood cells become rigid, they become sticky, and then they take on, instead of the round normal shape of the red blood cells, they become sickle shaped or crescent moon shaped, hence the name sickle cell disease. So because of this shape, the blood breaks down easily. Usually the life cycle of a normal red blood cell is 120 days within the body. But in the case of a sickle cell disease, it's 10 to 20 days. And then these blood cells, they break down easily. They block blood vessels and lead to a lot of problems within the body, like organ damage. And organs that are most especially affected are the liver, the kidneys, the spleen, and sometimes the eyes. The treatment options vary. Usually it's pain management, because like I mentioned earlier, they go through a lot of pain crisis. So pain management is the first thing. Currently the permanent cure for, and the only cure for sickle cell disease is stem cell transplantation, or something that people know as bone marrow transplantation. The proper infrastructure has to be put in place for this, even when they become readily available, to be executed. And education and awareness needs to be highly enforced so that people would actually become more aware of the disease and know what the disease is about, and to encourage testing so that people would know their status.
That was Dr. Hajar Maman Nasir, a public health expert in Abuja, Nigeria. Regulators have approved two new gene therapies for sickle cell disease that doctors hope can cure the painful inherited blood disorder. The Food and Drug Administration says the one-time treatments can be used for patients 12 and older with severe forms of the disease.
Regulators approved two new gene therapies for sickle cell disease that doctors hope can cure the painful inherited blood disorder that afflicts mostly black people in the United States. The Food and Drug Administration said the one-time treatment can be used for patients 12 and older with severe forms of the disease.
I think this announcement of the approval of gene therapy is potentially game-changing for a number of patients. Many patients lack the availability to do a stem cell transplant. And so for those patients, it often means a life filled with pain and with repeated hospitalizations and lots of complications. And this potentially offers a chance to alleviate those.
The disease affects hemoglobin, the protein in red blood cells that carries oxygen. A genetic mutation causes the cells to become sickle or crescent-shaped, which can block blood flow, cause excruciating pain, organ damage, strokes, or other problems.
I know for someone like myself who goes through red cell exchanges once every 7 to 8 weeks, this one-time kind of cure, I think, is very, very very much so needed. It, again, for someone like me, cuts down having to go to the hospital every month into doing this treatment and then just getting regularly checked by my doctor. So I think it's something that's really needed for this sickle cell community.
Current treatments include medication and blood transfusions. The only permanent solution is a bone marrow transplant, which must come from a closely matched donor without the disease and brings a risk of rejection.
I think this is a giant leap forward in gene therapy for treatment of chronic diseases. And so this is the first step forward. And I think in the future, we're going to see a lot more diseases that are able to be treated with gene therapy.
The Vertex treatment was recently authorized in Britain and Bahrain, and is currently under review elsewhere.
Living with sickle cell is a reality a patient is faced with for life. Mairama Indimi is a UK-based Nigerian mother who was born with sickle cell. Growing up with the disease, she faced several health challenges. I spoke with Mairama, who shared her experience of life with sickle cell and what it takes every day to live a productive life.
Well, sickle cell is quite a common illness that affects, according to the Sickle Cell Society, 1 in 4 West Africans and 1 in 10 Afro-Caribbeans. For me personally, it affects my day-to-day in everything I do. Let's say the normal able-bodied person operates at about 100% capacity every day. My 100% is probably their 50%. I get fatigued quite easily. There's a constant humming of pain, background pain. But, you know, it's made me more resilient, and I just have to listen to my body and take time in everything I do. I do get fatigued quite easily, as you can imagine. So I just have to pace myself throughout the day and throughout the week.
So you grew up dealing and managing sickle cell. What would you say are some of the most challenging aspects of living with sickle cell anemia?
The most challenging aspects of living with sickle cell is that it's very much, well, it can be, in my experience, an invisible disability. A lot of people wouldn't know by looking at me that I'm affected by it every day. So I guess getting a level of understanding from other people now is what I find most challenging. And as I said previously, I operate at a much lower capacity than others. And throughout my life, it's always hindered me in some way, but it hasn't stopped me from achieving my goals. A few examples and ways it has hindered me, particularly growing up, I was in and out of hospital quite a lot in my childhood and teenage years. I remember very much that I wasn't able to do what other children were able to do, especially my peers at school. For example, I wasn't able to join physical education classes. I wasn't able to go swimming. I wasn't able to go on a lot of school trips. Not that my parents stopped me, but just school's liability, and so they wouldn't accept that liability. I've missed a lot of school growing up. I remember one time when I was much younger that I missed so much school that when I came back and I joined my class, the teacher kicked me out because she thought that I wasn't a pupil in her class. That's how much school I've missed. And, you know, it's the same. It's always been a challenge trying to keep up when I've been at university, but alhamdulillah, I was able to, you know, achieve my goals. Graduated. I have 2 masters to my name. I'm in a great job.
What medical treatments and care do you receive to manage your condition?
I am currently, and I've been for a long time, on an exchange transfusion program. That's when they take your blood, probably around 60 to 70% of it, take it out, and then they transfuse you with new donated blood. And that's something that I do every month, and that has enabled me to thrive in my own way. And also you have your regular medication that you take on a daily basis. I take about 10, 11 tablets a day. Those are medication, not counting vitamins or supplements. So those are the things that keep me ticking. And obviously, sickle cell, one of the main symptoms is pain. So I do have a lot of prescription pain medication that I use moderately. As I said, that there's always some background of pain, but I do tend to reach for the stronger meds if I'm really struggling, which happens from time to time. But my transfusions keep me keep me healthy.
Do you have triggers, whether it's perhaps the weather or being tired, when you experience this pain episode?
Yes, absolutely. Triggers for me and for a lot of people, stress is a trigger that a lot of people don't know. I have quite a high stress position at work. And I've managed to, and I use coping mechanisms for that, which has helped. It can be a trigger, too much physical exertion and not taking enough water and not eating healthy.
Now you are a wife and mother. Before becoming a mother, were you concerned about having children?
So before getting married, I actually knew my husband for some years, and he knew of my condition from the very get-go. And luckily for me, he was very accepting. It's the case that, as a lot of people may have experienced, he was very accepting. We did a lot of research, and the kind of conversations we've had mostly surrounded how the ways he could support me and help me, and also just being very conscious of what I am capable of doing and what I'm not capable of doing. So again, just listening to my body and knowing that perhaps for me, especially with our lifestyles and where we live currently, it might not be possible for us to have many children, you know, like our previous parents' generation, because I have to be a healthy mother and have enough energy to pour into my child and my future kids. So just being conscious of what I can handle. So he's always been very supportive. He came with me to my transfusions. He had the necessary conversations with the doctors.
So as a mother, how has sickle cell anemia influenced your life, and how do you manage your needs versus taking care of your daughter?
Well, first of all, my daughter is almost four. So I had her June 2020 at the height of COVID, the pandemic. In London, in England, where I am, we had a nationwide mandate to quote unquote quote shield, which was sort of a rule in place whereby anyone that had a chronic illness or certain illnesses had to stay at home, and they weren't allowed to leave the confines of their house from March 2020 up until April 2021. So for the first year, it was pretty much my child and I in the house together. So I guess that was a different introduction to motherhood, because in England, you're very much encouraged to attend certain antenatal classes and postnatal classes, meet up with other mums, attend play groups with your child, go for walks even, introduce your child to the outdoors and etc. So we didn't really have any of that chance for almost the first year of her life. And also my pregnancy was considered high risk. And for anyone with sickle cell who decides to have children, that pregnancy will be considered high risk. So I was monitored closely and I had to really take care of myself. Now, going into motherhood, I've had to become a bit more aware not to put my own experiences onto my child, because she does not have sickle cell at all. She has the trait because her father is AA, and I tend to get worried if she goes out and she doesn't have a coat and it's cold outside. Well, the cold isn't going to affect her as it would myself. So or I can get worried if she goes into a pool and the pool water is a bit cold. I have to remember that her experience won't be the same as mine. So I'm very conscious when it comes to parenting her and remembering that she doesn't have a chronic illness, and I have to just let her do whatever she is, that she, just, you know, reach her full potential. So that's one way that it's impacted me. I'm sorry, what was the second part of your question?
No, that's fine. That's great. What advice would you give other mothers, and what message would you like to share?
Well, to other mothers, let's say, it's still the most wonderful, rewarding experience you could ever imagine. And should you wish to have a child, I don't think that having sickle cell should be seen as a barrier to that. I think that you just have to really listen to your body, listen to how much energy you have, know what you can do, because at the end of the day, your child does come first. So you have to really, really take care of yourself and make sure your health is at its optimum level so that you can be there to provide the best support and care for your child. Make sure you follow all your doctor's directions, your physician's directions, and make sure you stay on top of your fluid levels, you take your medication, and the pregnancy might be a bit more complicated, and yes, you might get a little bit more sick. And in my case, it wasn't really a smooth pregnancy, but at the end of the day, the reward far outweighs the whatever it was that I had to go through. And she's worth everything to me. So you shouldn't look at that as a barrier. And to people in general, I would say, for someone who is young, I would say that, again, sickle cell isn't a barrier. It shouldn't be a barrier to you living your life, to achieving your goals. It might just be a little bit difficult, and it might seem like everyone has a bit of a head start to you, but at the end of the day, just meet up, have a good support system, meet up with people or connect with people who have sickle cell, and who have, if it's the fact that you are thinking of becoming a mother, reach out to other mothers that have sickle cell, ask them questions. Or if it's a case of you're starting university and you want to know how someone balances their health versus with their studies, reach out to those people. And and also, if you want to know how someone balances work with having sickle cell, you know, reach out to those people. Build a community around yourself. And also, it's not a stigma. A lot of people in Africa view having sickle cell as a stigma, and really it isn't. It shouldn't stop you from getting married to whoever it is that you want to get married to, or to be with whoever it is that you want to be with. Be aware of how it can affect you, how it can affect your choices going forward, whether you choose to have kids or not. But anything is possible. And just take care of yourself and listen to your body, most of all.
Finally, what are your hopes as a sickle cell patient, whether it is regarding the medical aspect of it or the management of the disease on the continent?
I really hope that one day the medical facilities that we have here over in the UK would be widely available and accessible more in Africa, an affordable option. I really hope that the government would put it in place whereby those who are affected by this illness, all the governments of each country, those who are affected by this illness should be given free healthcare, free basic healthcare up to a certain level. That the governments should look into providing free medication for those with the sickle cell. Having sickle cell, you can't just catch it from touching someone. It shouldn't be looked at as a stigma. And you should definitely know whether you have you carry the gene, or if you have sickle cell, then you'll know how to manage your future better. But if anyone tells you that you can't do anything, or that your life is going to be limited, or that you can't get married if that's what you want to do, or you shouldn't have children if that's what you choose to do, that is absolutely not true. Because in my experience, I've gone through schooling, I've gone through university, I've done my master's, I have a job, I have a child, and I'm married, and I am with the right medications and the right physicians and the right care. I'm doing really well.
That's fantastic. Myra Mandimi, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That was sickle cell patient and advocate Myra Mandimi. Now to Nigeria, the southwestern Oyo State. Health workers there took part in a drive to spread information about the HPV vaccine in local villages. As Nigeria fights cervical cancer with the vaccine, all hands on deck to spread the word in villages.
Nigeria first introduced the human papillomavirus, or HPV vaccine, to help prevent cervical cancer as part of the routine immunization program in October last year. The vaccine is now available across the country. United Nations data revealed that cervical cancer is the third most common cancer in Nigeria and the second most frequent cause of cancer death among women aged between 15 and 44 years.
We have heard about cervical cancer before now, and we are aware of the disease it creates. That's why I asked my daughter to go get vaccinated as a preventative measure.
This vaccine is safe, and it is it doesn't have any negative effects on the girls. Because there are some rumors going around that they want to reduce the fertility of the girls. But we have been educating the parents that this vaccine is safe. The only thing it does is it prevents cervical cancer.
Nigerian authorities had been ramping up campaigns online and offline to educate citizens about the HPV vaccine.
It is very important for parents, healthcare workers, and government to come together to work to make sure that the girls are vaccinated against cervical cancer. Because, as we know, cancer is, let me say, it is a deadly disease if it is not prevented or if it is not detected early. But once a girl child is vaccinated, it prevents such a girl from having cervical cancer. And this reduces the burden that a person that has cervical cancer, the burden that anybody that has cervical cancer will put on the family and the government, as well as the health care workers.
Although the HPV vaccine has been in use in many developed nations for about two decades, only half of the countries in Africa have introduced it in their immunization programs, despite the continent's heavy burden.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
All for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us. I'm your host, Linor Mudu, in Washington, with producer Mukbilia Barrow. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.